Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel.
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Rusty Boy, July 1st, Canada Day, July 4th. Yesterday, as we record, happy Independence Day, Russ, to you. Happy Canada Day to everyone else. It was a great week. What'd you do, Rusty? By the way, you're listening to The Suspendables, which I guess you would know, Russ.
Yeah.
Anyone who tunes in. How are you, my man?
I'm good, bud. I've been cooking like I work in a restaurant.
Oh, that a boy. Yeah, why? What's going on?
Well, I'm out in Victoria, and my brother Bruce, he knows I love to cook, but he's been setting up parties left and right. And I've been cooking. I've cooked every night since I've been here except one, but yeah. We're having a good time and celebrated with friends. Every night. So frick, whether it's a holiday or not. And
every day's July 1st.
It's been fun. It's been fun being home in Victoria.
Well, Bruce is kind of the sleeper Cortinel, right? He doesn't get talked about as much as you and Jeff. And I love Bruce. It's kind of, he's got the perma grin.
Yeah.
The brother Bruce, right? He's just always fucking laughing all the time. Never had a bad day, this guy. You know, he's just great. He's one of the great sleeper partiers, you know, just sits there in the weeds a little bit. Well,
and he's keeping me up late for crying out loud.
Yeah, that takes a lot of coaxing. That takes a lot of coaxing.
Do you want to have another cigar? Yes.
Yeah.
Another bottle of wine? Yes.
That's really tough. Yeah.
Oh, man. So
anyway, on the show this week, I mean, the big thing, Rusty, and I know I kid you about the Stanley Cup, but there are going to be some large, super large dreams come true this week for some hockey players.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Probably Tampa Bay. They're up 3-0. The game's tonight. This is a Monday afternoon when we record. But it's going to be, I was thinking about it, today, going back over celebrations, in the Stanley Cup or the microphone being stuffed in a kid's face after winning the cup, winning a golf major, winning the World Series, winning the NBA title, all that stuff. Most of the athletes are rendered absolutely speechless, seconds after. Like I said, the dream is going to come true. Probably the biggest dream of any athlete's life, any hockey player's life. And do you remember back, Rusty, and your day as a kid? I'm trying to remember my days as a kid when we played street hockey. Everyone back in those days, I'm a bit older than you, but back in those days, everyone was Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
In the 70s. But I'm trying to think, or Guy Lafleur, everyone was Guy Lafleur or Bobby Orr. Can you think back, Russ, when maybe your first recollection of, easy for you to say, Jim, recollection.
Yeah. You're not tipping them, are you?
No, not yet.
Break your 10-year streak.
Talk about it, Rusty, the dream. The boyhood dream to become a Stanley Cup champ.
I remember playing in the backyard. We had a concrete parking area, so we would play out there over at the school, and everybody wanted to be Flower, or Bobby Orr, Bobby Clark, even.
Right.
I idolized Boris Alming, but he played defense, and I was a centerman. But I just loved the way he played. So I was a Leaf fan, and then I get drafted to them. So you can imagine how exciting that is as a kid growing up in Canada, getting picked by your favorite team. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I really wanted to play in the NHL. I didn't watch a lot of hockey. I watched the first period and then I go play, and I just couldn't sit still and watch the whole game. But right. I watched a fair amount of hockey, but yeah, that Stanley Cup dream, Jeff and I, we brought the Stanley Cup to Victoria to unveil a monument in honor of the 1925 Stanley Cup champions, Victoria Cougars.
Right.
And they gave us the cup for a day, and Jeff hadn't had it. And so we went around and we went to our parents' house and took a picture with the Stanley Cup on our front porch, and the house belonged to somebody else. But that kind of sums up, you know, for us, he won it, I didn't. And we brought it to that, back to our childhood where those dreams all happened for, you know, were happening or starting, and mm-hmm. for both of us. And it was a really special moment. And then we went up the street to our favorite fish and chip hamburger place and we brought it in there. And then it was fun. Like, even though I didn't win it, Jeff was able to take it to all these places that really meant something for us. And it was funny. We took these pictures and we shared them with our family. Anyways, it was a great day, hanging with him, watching him do all this stuff was something that he won.
Right. Of course, talking Jeff won with the Oilers. Can you think back, Russ, when obviously you would have been watching the game when Jeff was playing with the Oilers?
Mm-hmm.
What went through your mind and heart and all that in your gut when the final buzzer went and your brother Jeff just won a Stanley Cup?
So I was in Hawaii with my then girlfriend, and we were, it was 1988, mm-hmm. and we were packing up, and we almost missed our flight because I wanted to see him. She's like, we got to go. And I said, I have to see him lift the Stanley Cup. I don't care if I miss my flight. So
right.
when he lifted it and started carrying around, I just yelled and screamed. I probably cried, but I remember just going nuts.
Right.
And I was still... You know, I was 22 years old, and you think you're going to get that opportunity at some point. Hopefully, you hope mm-hmm. your plan. So, I got traded that next November mm-hmm. to Montreal, and we ended up in the finals the next year. And I just thought it was destiny that okay, Jeff won it in 88, and Russ is going to win it in 89, and we lost 4-2, and that's as close as I ever got. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was, I believe I'm a believer in karma. I'm a believer in a lot of things. And I just, I really thought this is meant to be, that I'm going to win. And, you know, we didn't, and it just sucked. It really sucked. And then I never got back there. So,
mm-hmm.
but I was so happy for him and still am today that our name, you know, our last names sure. on the trophy. So,
right. Can you recall running into him then for the first, like you saw it on TV, and then obviously the plans get put in motion for the Courtnell celebration.
Yeah.
The first moment you saw him live when you face to face.
I can't remember that summer if I went back out there and saw him in Victoria. I was spending a lot of time in Toronto then.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really recall if I, you know, when he didn't have the, I don't think he had that big party that every player has now because they didn't give the players the cup then.
Right.
For a day like they do now. So it wasn't like there was this huge, you know, celebration, which I think is so great now that each player gets the cup for a day. They can invite everybody over. You hear about these epic backyard parties and or they go to the golf course or guys are on their boats, whatever they're doing. And one of the funniest ones, the guy who carries the cup told me was that Steve Larmer was having this party. And at midnight he said, get that trophy and all these people out of my house. Cause you know, I think he was in Peterborough or something like that. And
right.
Everybody came, and Steve's such a nice guy. He probably didn't say no, you know.
Right.
It's turned into probably the whole town there. But there's been some crazy stories of with the cup. I mean, that thing's a celebrity in itself.
I think Joe Nieuwendyk, I know he won the cup. I'm guessing with Calgary, probably, I guess.
He won it. He beat me. His first cup he won in 89, and then he won one with Dallas, and then I think he won another one. I think he's won it three times.
I don't know. We'll get Stevie to look that up.
Yeah.
He had, when that cracked open, and I think, although I'm biased, but I'm pretty sure it was the Oilers who started that, moving the cup around the city. You know, that they got their hands on. I think Mess kind of stole it because they were freaking out where the cup was. And he started going into bars and, well, bars and more bars, right? And all sorts of bars, all kinds of. I think they brought it into a strip joint. The Forum Hotel is a famous strip joint right across the street from the Northlands Coliseum. Players stay there when they get traded or they come to town for the first time. They end up staying there. And then guys took it. You know, took it for the day and or an extended period of time or whatever. And because I went and played in a charity event in Lachute, Quebec, where Kevin's from, and he had the cup for the whole weekend.
Wow.
At his golf tournament. But it was, you know, so there's been some crazy stories about where that cup ends up. But one of my favorite stories, if I'm not mistaken, Joe Nieuwendyk got the cup. I think he's from Ontario. He might be from Whitby or Ajax, Ontario, someplace like that. And what he did was trying to figure out how everyone could see the cup.
Yeah. You know,
everyone in his town could do it. So I think what he did is he went to the busiest intersection in his town.
Uh-huh.
And he put it in the middle of it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think he just set it down on the sidewalk or put it in the middle of the intersection and the place went upside down, you know. Anyway, I thought that's really cool. You know, that's really cool.
I took it. So that day Jeff and I had it, I lived on Beach Drive in Victoria at the time. And I think Jeff had to go home and shower or something. So I had the cup and I put it in my front yard and my kids were out looking at it, playing, and people started stopping, getting out of their cars and taking pictures with it. So we had to move it inside.
Sure.
And I got these great pictures of my kids crawling all over it. They're little tykes at the time. And that day we had a fundraiser at the mall and all the money, you got a picture with a cup and Jeff and I, and it was like $5 or $10 and all the money went to minor hockey. And then, and then we went to the, Strathcona Hotel to the rooftop. Grant Olson and his brothers.
You took me there. Yeah, remember that part.
Yeah. Grant Olson and his brothers own the hotel, the Strathcona. And so we're at the top patio. And we took pictures with the cup and all the money, I think, went to cancer. So we were using it as a fundraiser for these different charities.
Great idea.
And at midnight, Jeff said, I'm done because I can't lift. The rule is if you don't win it, you can't lift it. You can't lift it over your head.
Oh, no.
That's the unwritten rule. Yeah. So I couldn't lift it over my head because I didn't win it. So every time someone wanted a picture, they'd say, can you lift it up over your head? And he was getting so exhausted from lifting the freaking thing. He turned to me. He goes, fuck, I wish you had won this thing.
No kidding. Isn't that funny? Yeah. There's a comedian friend of mine who does a great routine. He launches in and says, so did you see the Stanley Cup final? It was presented this week and such a team won last night. And he said, I love the interview when they're in the locker room and everyone's getting champagne and beer poured in their eyes and all that. And a player will be standing there and they've stuffed the microphone in his face and go, can you give us an idea of what you're feeling right now? You know, and there's families everywhere, right? It's just a shit show. And the guy's standing there with his, you know, with his wife beside him. And he says, how are you feeling? And he says, this is absolutely the greatest fucking day of my life. Hands down. And then he looks over and sees his wife and he goes, it's the second greatest day of my life. You know? And then he said, are you sure? Okay. I still think it's the Stanley Cup because I didn't see it after you got married on the top of the steps of the church putting your wife over your head going, yeah. Anyway, great stuff, you know. Yeah. Joe Noondek, by the way, has won it three times. He's one of only 11 players in NHL history to win the Stanley Cup with three or more different teams.
Yeah. Mike Keane won Montreal, Colorado, and Dallas.
Yeah, Noondek wins in 89 with Calgary, 99 with Dallas, and 2003 with New Jersey. I forgot he played for New Jersey.
Yeah, I forgot that one. I would have lost that bet.
Yeah, there's guys sneaking under the radar here, Rusty, that are going to, assuming Tampa wins, how about this guy's luck? Pat Maroon.
Oh, my God.
Okay, played in Edmonton.
The big rig,
played in Edmonton. Great guy. Nice guy. Mm-hmm. He's from St. Louis. He's third or fourth liner, probably. Okay.
He is now. Yeah. Wasn't when he was with Edmonton.
Grinder, you know, good, great guy, super friendly guy. So gets traded to St. Louis, scoops a cup out of nowhere. Then the next year he goes to Tampa, and wins there. And he's probably going to win another one.
How about the mayor of Tampa came out and said, I hope we don't win game four. Because obviously, I didn't have to read the rest of the story because he wants to win it and is them to win it. I mean, the hockey players that are superstitious are probably going, hey, buddy, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Who wishes for a non-win? Yeah.
And we've seen Montreal come back. But I have to say, in my opinion, this is the worst series so far in all the playoffs that I've watched.
Talk about it. Let's hear.
It's three Cobb, and it just, I want to see, you know, Montreal to win a couple games. I'd love to see, you know, I'd love it if it was, you know, 2-2 right going out after this game, but it's just been too easy. Right. I think it's been too easy. And
Montreal playing bad, Russ, or Tampa going good?
I think Tampa's just playing so well, and they've been there, done that, and they know what it takes. And I think Montreal's had we all can agree that they've had a great playoff. And these last three games, it just looks like, you know, either they're tired or the other team's so freaking good that they're not at that level. Mm-hmm. But I wish it was a better series, but we'll see. You never know. Montreal's done it before, so who knows?
Well, our producer, Stevie, who knows way more about hockey than me and probably you.
Yeah.
He said maybe the second game they could have won, Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the second and the other, you know, the first and the third, not so much. And I mean, they're a powerhouse, right? They're a powerhouse.
Yeah. Yeah,
Stevie's on fire right now, Rusty. I'm getting updates here.
Oh my God, I know. He's firing away.
Yeah, only four teams have come back from 0-3 in the NHL playoffs. Only one did it in the Cup final, the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs beat Detroit in the Stanley Cup. Poor Leafs, by the way, Rusty. Poor Leafs. Okay, everyone loves to pick on the Leafs, your former team.
Yeah.
Everyone knows, okay, uncle on that they haven't won a cup since 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now the Leaf haters, Rusty, now they're breaking it out in months now. Okay. Okay. I saw one the other day in months, and then the amount of weeks that they haven't won.
Oh God.
And then Stevie found something the other day that said they've now set the record for the amount of days without winning a Stanley Cup. So poor Leaf.
You know, did you ever see those Hard Rock cafes? And they would, they had a ticker on top of the one in Beverly Hills, and it was keeping track of how many. It was keeping track of something, and it was just rolling. I don't know if it was people served or something, and it was. They should have one in Toronto. Days since we last won the cup.
Like it's a space shuttle countdown.
I met Gretz's partner in the restaurant in Toronto.
Oh, Bitoff.
Bitoff, yeah.
Yeah.
He was out here looking at James Island with his son and some friends. And I asked him about the restaurant, and they shut it down in Toronto, and they're building a tower there. So no more Gretzky's. 25 years, he said, they had that restaurant.
Yeah, that's probably a year ago.
That was a very successful restaurant, too. But obviously, real estate's worth more than a restaurant space.
Yeah,
but.
And it's a good run. You know, I mean, Gretz is, you know, he's never too greedy, right, with stuff that he did. And I'll tell you, it's interesting to bring up the Wayne Gretzky restaurant and the Hard Rock Cafe. You're a business guy. When Hard Rocks came on, they were the most expensive franchises to buy, right? The mm-hmm. Hard Rock Cafes, they were through the roof. You had to buy, they became known for the memorabilia, right?
Yeah.
Hanging on the wall.
Merch.
Stuff. All the merch and in the restaurant itself, right? It was like a conversation. Every time you looked, every 2 feet, there was another piece on the wall.
Yeah.
And Gretzky's was the same. They both have little shops in the front. Okay. Yeah. Rusty. And they're about 10 square feet.
Yeah. Okay?
They are. They're only little wee shop. They're little walk-in closets, right? Where you can buy shit when you leave the restaurant. Okay. Tommy Bidoff told me, and another friend of mine who had a Hard Rock said, they make way more money per square foot out of that little thing than they've ever made with sales, food and beverage sales. Out of the restaurant.
Wow.
Well, how many people have a Hard Rock t-shirt?
Yeah, no. Right? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
Haley Wickenheiser was great. Rusty, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's great. She's funny.
Very funny. What a cool girl. You forget, you know, she was so humble.
Yeah.
You forget how accomplished she is.
It was unbelievable when you were, I don't even think you read everything that she won.
I was looking at.
Christ, we would have had to have two shows.
I know. I was looking at the medals that she's won. Anyway, she did all that. I don't know if we gave it enough praise, but she's a doctor. Too. Yeah. I mean, everyone kind of knew that, but she just graduated.
Doctor.
Yeah, doctor. So. Thanks a lot for all your response from Haley. There was I had another number of people email me and stuff about it with how impressed they were. And she worked for the Leafs.
Yeah.
She's like a senior scout, senior personnel, player personnel deal. So
yeah, she's done well.
Remarkable young girl. So Rusty, let's talk about
my golf game. I'm struggling right now.
Are you bad? Okay, well, I've got a note here. I want to get your favorite. First of all, I want to get your favorite barbecue recipe. Can you give us one in 30 seconds? How can I do a freaking steak, Russ? How can I do a steak properly on the barbecue?
I use Lowry's seasonal. I'm looking right at it. And then on the other side, I use Lowry's garlic salt, Lowry's garlic powder, and pepper. And ever since I've had Paris's mom's steak that way, it's hard for me to go to a restaurant and eat a steak because it's so freaking good. And every time I make it for somebody, they're like, oh my God, that's the best steak I've ever had. It's that reaction. And I just grill it. I've cooked my meat medium rare. And that's it.
Very good.
Simple.
Okay.
But a miso salmon recipe that I learned in Hawaii is brilliant. If you like salmon, it's...
All right. Tell us quickly. What is it? Like miso soup? Like the flavor of that?
You get the miso paste.
Yeah.
So you get a tablespoon of that with a quarter cup of olive oil.
All right.
Chop up a couple mince up garlic, balsamic vinegar, a tablespoon of balsamic vinegar, tablespoon of miso paste, and you make a paste out of that. You just keep stirring it until like lots of garlic. And then you rub it on, I buy my salmon at Costco. And so you get them the big long fillet, right?
All right.
And you just rub it on the top of the salmon, skin down, broil it for about 7-8 minutes, turn the broiler off, bake it till it's cooked. And it's freaking the best salmon I've ever had. And I grew up eating salmon. I was tired of eating it. And then I moved to Hawaii for 3.5 years. And the guy I was renting from made this salmon like once a week or once every 2 weeks. And it was so good.
Yeah, the smoked salmon is the best.
Quarter cup of olive oil, tablespoon of balsamic vinegar, tablespoon of miso paste. Chop up a lot of garlic and put it up and just smother it all over it.
My introduction to salmon fishing, because I have a note down here about your charity. I said, I got to ask Russ, because you had one of the most successful foundations and charitable events. And I'm now that you're up in Canada, I've always bragged about this thing, how cool it was, your event.
Mm-hmm.
But I got introduced to when you guys were doing the Courtnell Classic, the fishing classic, I'd yeah. never been big, as I call it, like trophy fishing, you know, for salmon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you guys invited me to that. Well, it was, I guess Mess took it over that 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And off I went to go salmon fishing. And I couldn't believe what was in front of me. When this, no, don't bring a thing.
Yeah.
By the way, here's your guide. Here's these ocean-bearing boats. And shotgun start, okay? Yeah. 100 grand they put together for a Calcutta. There was the event was 20 guys fish with 20 celebs in their boat. And so this is super cool. And then, by the way, this lodge, okay? The Queen Charlotte Lodge, okay, by the way. Just in case this all isn't good enough that you're doing this world-class fishing. When you're out there, just go find the ship that the guy has, okay, that you can park at and eat lunch, okay? Yeah. Remember, he's got a 120-foot boat that everyone goes to. It was just the coolest.
Oh, yeah. It was great. What a great
time. Anyway, I was lippy and drunk. The guide sets all your lines and everything. He rigs them all up, tells you what to do. And I was popping off going, don't worry about it. Okay, now, I'd never been fishing in the ocean, Russ. I said, I got this. And he watches me cast a big line out there with a 5-pound fucking sinker on it, right? And he goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm just flicking a line out there, you know, just see what happens. He goes, reel that shit in right now. Reel that shit in right now, okay? I don't even know the guy's name. I'm like, take it easy. He goes, reel it in, okay? And as I reel it in, the rod, Rusty, big bend.
No.
I go, I got one. He goes, reel it in, okay? Now, Russ, he's rigged 4 lines, 2 on each side of the boat. And of course, what did I do? I hooked all freaking 4 lines together. Okay. I pull it up, right? I'm going like this. It fucking goes, that's 25, because they're 5-pound sinkers.
Yeah.
You know, that they put on weights and they put them on. He goes, you fucking hooked all the sinkers together. He said, he pushes me, Russ, physically handled me and said, sit there, do not touch a thing, right, on this boat. Not a thing. I said, really? Not a thing. He goes, you're fucking wrecked. He had to cut all the lines and re-break.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
What a great event that was. I've always loved it because you raised so much money for Canuck House.
Yeah, Canuck Place, yeah.
And someone reached out to me the other day. It's either our buddy JB, there, James Brown, or someone saying, I want to go back to the Courtnell Golf Tournament dinner, world-class deal, uber celeb event. So I made a note here. What's going on with that, Rusty? Now that you're up in Victoria, are you going to run this thing again?
We've been talking about taking it more to a national level across Canada, mm-hmm. applying for grants and you know, it's all mental health based. We built the first 72-hour care emergency psychiatric center in North America. And it's called the Archie Courtnell. It's named after our dad, Archie Courtnell. And then we helped build long-term beds. So there was, I believe, 54 beds for mental health patients that needed more time. And mm-hmm. and that's in the hospital. I think we have 2 floors there in the new hospital in Oak Bay or Victoria. And mm-hmm. We're discussing getting it going again. So lots of meetings, and then COVID hit. So it's kind of put a damper on it. And Judy Christensen, who
I remember Judy.
Yeah. She helped us, has done everything for us. And her business was just slammed with COVID, you know, unfortunately.
Oh, God, hers, the poor girl, right?
Yeah. Does events, like you can imagine the event business, how that went.
Oof, right.
So anyways, we're talking about it, but we got, you know, big ideas. We're having lots of meetings and Zoom calls and stuff. So we'll see how it goes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good deal. You were a great predictor, by the way, my friend. As we bounce around from topic to topic, you had said a while back when the rumor was being floated that Wayne was moving out of California, he was going to leave the Oilers, and he may end up being an announcer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the rumor. And you said, you know, for these networks to compete, although there's some great announcers, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's some fabulous ones, but usually it's just a big announcer mill, you know, and they run guys through there one after another, one after another. You know, Don Cherry was the longest surviving guy. Ron McLean, your buddy, who gave you a shout out the other night, I understand, Rusty.
Yeah, before the game.
I don't know. Maybe Steve can find the clip.
Bob Coles texting from St. John's, Newfoundland. Russ Cardinal from the Victoria Golf Club.
Oh, Rusty. You got a name mentioned from the big Ron McLean. Thanks a lot. That's courtesy of Sportsnet.
Coast to coast.
Coast to coast, baby. You're going. Anyway, these back to when you were the great predictor. So we've... You know, you guys come and go all the time. They're trying different players all the time. Some stay, some don't. I think this Bieksa has talked himself into a big, long career in hockey. He's so good. He's so good. But you said, Jimmy, if you're going to survive in a network, these networks are going to have to lay out big cash.
Yeah.
To get the big gunners. And TNT lands the great one. Great move. And then I read yesterday, ESPN is taking on Mark Messier.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Chris Chelios too.
And oh, is that right?
I didn't believe know that. So
they heard our take, Russ. They must be listening to the show. So that'll be great stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think we were the only
best
sport.
Defenseman, one of the number one and two best forwards.
Yeah. Ever. I mean, we're one of the few sports that didn't have Hall of Famers, you know, on the air.
Right.
And, or have a panel of them. You'd think the NBA, I mean, they got Magic or not. They did. They
had
Magic, Shaq, and
Barkley. And these
Barkley.
Guys.
And then Kenny, is it Kenny Smith? Anyways, those four guys are funny. They have a good time. They've made tons of money playing. And so obviously they're not doing it for the money. They're getting paid a lot of money is what I'm trying to say. If you're going to get those kind of quality people who have made a lot of money, you're going to have to lay out some serious cash to get these guys to, and it's great to see that NHL getting, you know, Wayne and Mark, especially those two guys, and what they'll be able to share with their audience is going to be really interesting and to hear from Mark and Wayne and their comments on games and players.
Yeah. And I appreciate listening to Sportsnet and flipping on Elliot Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think he's ever played hockey. I get it. But I want to hear from Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
I want to hear from Mark Messier.
Me too.
I want to hear from Chris Chelios.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you 100%. Yeah. I mean, I do. I know them all three of them very, very well. And I'm just really curious to hear them talk to the audience and see what they have to say. And I think you put the right people around those guys, they're going to be great.
Give them a chance.
Yeah. Yep.
Give them a chance. Right. Yeah. Cause, if you know, it looks like an easy job. Okay. When you see it's like when I listen to radio shows, you know, I thought this, you know, the same thing all the time. It's, you know, 10 to 8 and the traffic, blah, 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 blah. Right. And I go, this is so lame until you try and do it yourself. Right. And I think I did it once, hosted a show when I was in radio. And the guy said, well, that was a good try. Okay.
Yeah.
You're done. You're not doing it. But anyway, what a year it'll be next year.
Mm-hmm.
So LeBron James, Rusty, we've often spoken about how tough it is to be a parent with a kid in competitive sports. You know, speaking of Wayne or Messi, these guys have kids, you know, everyone's looking at them all the time, right? Terrible pressure on these kids. LeBron James has a son, Bronny. He's in a tournament. So it's high school, I guess. And, LeBron's there. It's Bronny playing at the, LeBron James tournament in the LeBron James arena.
Right.
Okay. And all this stuff. Did you read this story?
No, my wife told me about it this morning.
So the announcer, speaking of color guys who aren't going to last, play-by-play guys, the PA announcer, they got a PA announcer.
Yeah.
Who's announcing fouls and all that stuff. I don't know how it works in baseball or in basketball, how they do it. But I get the guy's pretty funny. And so Bronny draws a foul. Okay. And the announcer goes, and that's a foul on LeBron James, or on Bronny James, or whatever his name is. He'll go to the foul line, Probably because his dad is LeBron James.
Something about his name's on the building. His name's on the building. You get that foul when your name's on the building or something like that.
It's just great.
With sarcasm.
Yeah, total sarcasm. Totally funny. Go ahead, Russ.
Then LeBron James goes out on the court and just giving it to the guy. And I'm not a fan of LeBron James, but my wife's asking my opinion. She goes, okay, pretend it's Steve Nash and it's the Steve Nash building. Because I'm friends with Steve.
Sure.
And I said, both were wrong. I said, the announcer was totally wrong. And so was LeBron for stepping onto the court. I mean, all of us would get mad, but to go, they had to
it's kind of funny, get him up.
I think it was hilarious what the guy said, but obviously totally offside. But LeBron shouldn't be on the court when his kid's playing there. Come on.
So there's levels of bad parents, right? Okay. The first level of a bad parent is in these seats and then complaining to the other parents, okay, about their kid and the ice time. That's bad.
Yeah.
The next level is going down to the rink, going down ringside, okay, and screaming at a ref or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's next level shit. Now you're into some serious time. Okay. Third level full on is going onto the court and running to where the announcer is holding up the game.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
And losing your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Yelling at a PA announcer. Yeah. So- LeBron, baby. Funny.
Anyway, oh, God. The poor kid. How embarrassed was the kid? He must just be, oh my God. Dad, get off the court, please.
Yeah, I was going to take on a coach that didn't play my kid enough. You know, I became the parent I hate, and I've always preached against that.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you who stopped me. My kid.
Yeah.
My kid is the one who grabbed me and said, Dad, get in the car, you know.
I told the story where the dad was yelling at the refs, the other team, our team behind me.
Yeah.
And I called a timeout when I was coaching hockey, and I said, whose dad is that? And kid puts his head down and he's like, it's mine. And if he doesn't shut up, you're not playing another shift the rest of the game.
Perfect.
He goes in front of the entire audience, all the parents, he goes, Dad, if you don't shut up, I'm getting benched. And he left the arena.
Yeah.
A guy was so embarrassed. And he came up to me in the parking lot after and he said, Russ, I just want to apologize for my behavior.
Good deal.
I was so freaking embarrassed, but I didn't realize how embarrassing I was for my own kid. And he goes, thank you. You'll never hear another peep from me again.
Right. That's so funny.
The kid was great.
Dad! Poor kid. Shut your hole, Dad. Okay, please. Rusty, what are we going to do? Years ago, 10 years ago, the price of a hockey stick kind of doubled, you know, or 20 years ago or something. It came up and skates were, became a couple hundred bucks and stuff like that. And so I've kind of kept an eye on it over the years. My kids are grown. My kids never did play hockey. And then I ran into a guy the other day. I'm going, oh my God, look at that stick, man. What are they like a couple hundred bucks now? You know, these sticks? Mm-hmm. The guy goes, try four.
No. $400 yes, bucks?
Can be. It can be. Okay, it can be. And I'm like, and what about the skates? Yeah, you're into $1,200.
Wow.
Okay. So
crazy.
Speaking of Mark Messier, he came out a long time ago, right? And said, we've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Hockey has always been grassroots. The greatest attraction for people to hockey is because it is affordable. And it's the equalizer amongst all economic disparity here. Okay. The rich and the poor can all play together and all that stuff. But this is out of control, Rusty.
Yeah. That's nuts.
What's going to happen? What happens to a kid who can't afford a hockey stick?
Well, hopefully teams have some fundraisers. There's I grew up with used equipment and used skates, but sticks, you had to buy new, right? You can't get a used stick. So that was the only thing that I would get that was brand new. And my first pair of skates were brand new was when I was 17 and I made the Victoria Cougars in the WHL. So if there's got to be programs where, you trade, your kid grows, everybody have a swap meet with the skates and stuff. And
We got to come up with a stick, Rusty.
Yeah, I know.
Suspendables has to come up with a stick that's like $150 or something.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. Anyway, it's gonna eliminate kids who could otherwise.
It already has, obviously. I mean, yeah. I felt so bad for some of the parents in LA when I was there. You had to prepay for the entire season, travel, everything at the beginning of the season. Because they were worried about kids quitting, and then they didn't have the budget. Right. And the last year I coached Lawton in LA, it was like $13,250, and that was airfares to tournaments, Jesus, hotels, man. Ice time, and they paid the coach.
Wow! Too much, man. It's gonna break down.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and people moving to Canada are. The immigration, the immigrants, the people moving here, you know, they're going to go, okay, I left whatever country to come to this great country and I don't have a lot of money. My kids, I'll put them in soccer, or I'll put them in baseball, but they're not going to put them in freaking hockey when you got to pay for all that. Mark's right. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but we definitely need to make it more affordable for everyone, and hopefully organizations are doing that.
Yeah, we're gonna have to, I don't know, we'll have to watch and see, but I was just blown away. If the guy would have told me they're $600, I would have been blown away for skates, you know, but they're 12.
Yeah, I had no idea they were $1,200.
Right. An awful story, awful, absolutely awful story comes out yesterday. Matisse Kivlenyk, 24-year-old goaltender, right? With Columbus.
Yeah, and it just came out just now that he was killed with an errant fireworks mortar blast. Police in Michigan said the firework tilted slightly and started to fire toward people nearby Sunday night. Kivlenyk was in a hot tub and tried to get clear with several other people. I thought he fell and hit his head and died.
That's what I'd heard too originally.
Says died of chest trauma.
Yeah. Good God. Yeah. God. Good God.
Horrible.
You know, when you hear this stuff, you want to acknowledge it. You know, you can't ignore it. Rusty, when I hear this, it just, for example, we just finished sort of a 45-minute show. I left it to the end on purpose because if we put it at the beginning, it makes every other sports story completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, completely and utterly irrelevant. So what an awful thing. What an awful thing. I lost a brother, man, at 20, 21 years old, and you've lost your dad at a really young age and stuff. And just a tragic, tragic thing.
Yeah.
To him and the family.
Yeah. Yeah. And all his friends and family. Oh my gosh. My son just, he sent me a note and said he met him at Columbus. Bruce went to Columbus's rookie camp, and that's where he met him a few years ago. They're probably about the same age.
Right.
So, but everybody talked about what a great kid he was, and he always had a smile on his face and just made everybody around him. He made everyone around him happier.
Right.
By his love of, you know, what he was doing and his friends and family and stuff.
Yeah. So
it's sad. And you just think about, your own kids when stuff like this happens, right? Yeah. Awful. Yeah. Terrible, everybody.
Anyway, we acknowledge that. And hopefully we can give people a place to get some relief from all the stresses of life and all that stuff. Rusty, so I got my barbecue recipes from you. What kind of car do you drive?
I drive an Escalade.
Oh, the big caddy.
Yeah. I'm still in the hand-me-down business. It's Paris's old car.
Okay, so. I'll tell you what. So I have an 05, okay?
An 05?
I got a beater, 320,000 clicks, okay?
Wow.
On it. And then the other day, my daughter, okay, bought a new car. And I haven't driven a new car in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I got in there and... Okay, they're so modern and they're so highly technical.
Yeah.
That I thought, okay, I thought two things, Russ, that that there's something wrong with it. Okay, because when I went, I went to change lanes, and there's this rumbling.
Oh yeah, the
vibration. Yeah. And So what do I do? I phone her. I go, Sid, I got to get this into the mechanic. There's something wrong with your car. When you go to change left or right, no, Dad. Warning system.
Yeah.
Warning system. The cars rusty are unfucking believable right now.
We have two brand new Jeeps Wranglers on our James Island to take people around.
Yeah.
So I get the guys in the car yesterday. We're taking them back to the Sydney and I get in the car and I'm like, Bruce, this thing, it won't start. I hit the start button. The engine isn't on. He goes, yeah, that's because it's electric and gas powered. So when it's idle, when it stops, it doesn't, the engine's not running. And I'm like,
So funny.
And so I had the same experience. Something's wrong. This thing won't start.
Yeah. The other one, Rusty, is I'm driving along. I'll be talking to myself. Okay. Cause I'm alone a lot, Rusty. Uh-huh. And I'm going, I got to get a Tim Hortons. Okay. I'll say that in the truck. And then on the screen. Okay. I'm going, what the fuck? Nearest Tim Hortons. Like Siri is in there. She's all around the car. Anyway.
Oh God.
I sound like a kid on Christmas morning, but God.
I got it. Why don't you get that car?
Yeah.
And start driving around and say, I need a girlfriend. I'm not that funny, but I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I can golf.
I'm lonely. Rusty, let's get out of here, man. Another good week. You do what you're doing. You're up in Victoria selling real estate. I just read another article that real estate's out of control. So get now's the time. Make hay, Rusty.
Make hay
in the sunshine.
Yeah.
And let's hope I want you to get that event cranked up again. We'll have a riot.
I'll send you pictures.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's hurtful. Yeah, that's hurtful. I should be invited. That's fine. Have a good week, everybody. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and, of course, Russ Courtney. We'll be back again next week with another episode. See you later, Rusty.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtney and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.